spirited arguments at the South Carolina Supreme Court, what does it mean for the future of discovery in civil litigation? Let's go to the bench.
The latest in legal news and information from Collins & Lacey, a leading South Carolina defense firm for construction, workers' comp, hospitality, retail, trucking, professional liability, mediation, corporate, government, and business law. This is The Legal Bench.
And welcome to The Legal Bench. I'm Michael Burney. Today, we are examining the recent arguments in the South Carolina Supreme Court involving the issue of immediate appealability of discovery orders issued by a circuit judge. In Mosley v. Alston and DaVita Healthcare, the plaintiff alleges injuries arising from a motor vehicle accident involving a patient of the healthcare defendants following the patient's visit to the defendant's dialysis facility. Plaintiff asserts that the patient was not in a condition to drive following his treatment and that the healthcare defendants were negligent in permitting him to leave the facility and drive. The healthcare defendants sought review by the Supreme Court of a judge's order to produce extensive responses to requests for production by the plaintiff regarding, among other things, prior similar incidents at the healthcare defendants' facility system-wide. The Supreme Court granted cert to review the order. Argument on the matter took place October 15, 2020. Joining us today to discuss the case and why it should be important to civil defendants is Christian Stegmeier, shareholder at Collins & Lacey and chair of the firm's retail and hospitality practice team. Additionally, Christian is an experienced appellate advocate, having appeared in over 45 appeals before the South Carolina Supreme Court and Court of Appeals, as well as the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. Christian, this case grabbed the attention of a lot of people who watch our appellate courts here in South Carolina. What was the reason for all of this attention?
Well, first and foremost, this argument was an immediate or an interlocutory appeal. And ordinarily in South Carolina, there are few, if any, interlocutory appeals. This was a discovery order, and our case law teaches us that ordinarily, discovery orders are not immediately appealable. So that's grabbed a lot of attention. In our statute that governs appellate jurisdiction, there isn't even any mechanism to appeal a discovery order. So in this case, the healthcare defendants had to rely on common law and convince the Supreme Court that there was a need for the review and that that was exceptional. Probably more importantly than just the procedural mechanism of getting the Supreme Court, this case is an example of what is a simmering tension that exists between the plaintiff's bar and the defense bar in South Carolina regarding the parameters of acceptable discovery in the state.
Tell us a little bit more about that tension. What are you talking about?
Well, under our rules of civil procedure, the parties may pursue information that is reasonably calculated, and that's a term of art, reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. And the tension is that the plaintiff's bar often has very different ideas than the defense bar about what constitutes reasonably calculated. The reality is that many in the plaintiff's bar have become very sophisticated with their prosecution, and especially as it relates to the prosecution of personal injury claims. And with the discovery requests they propound are often very extensive and very wide-ranging. We have a doctrine, or it's a strategy used often by the plaintiff's bar. It's called the reptile theory. And without getting into a huge discussion about what the reptile theory is, often that discovery, it includes all sorts of requests for production of documents and depositions as it relates to corporate governance, corporate operations, rules and protocols, all those things. And when you start asking for all those things, it starts to build up. And to respond to all that discovery, the reality is that it takes a lot of time and expense. And so frequently, civil defendants and their counsel question the validity and the efficacy of all these requests, especially when they start considering the time and expense that goes into answering them. So as a result, there is often a lot of wrangling that goes on in discovery between the parties. As well, the defendants can and do put up a lot of objections, which are which they are recognized as being valid by the rules. But notwithstanding the validity of these objections under the rules, the plaintiff's bar has been very adroit in attacking these objections and characterizing them as boilerplate and holding their counterparts' feet to the fire with motions to compel and other procedural maneuvers in order to get to what they believe to be the full story in a case.
So let's talk about the argument at the Supreme Court. What were the major themes, and what did you see that the court really had their focus on?
So the one thing I'll say is this, is that all Supreme Court arguments are filmed, and you can watch them in real time as well. You can go to the South Carolina Judicial Department's website and click on Supreme Court, and all of these cases are cataloged to where you can watch the argument. And I'll share with you that this argument was very animated. All five justices were very engaged, and there were a lot of questions. It was what is known as a hot bench, because all five justices were very involved in the case. And so the long story short is this, is that the plaintiff asked for a lot of information, and the defendant in this case is a very large corporation. And so the incidents giving rise to this case happened in one particular location, and the allegation was they shouldn't have let this patient drive. And the plaintiffs in this case, they wanted to know more about it, as it related to, among other things, other similar circumstances that had arisen over the years, and all sorts of things as it relates to training of instruction to the staff about letting people leave after the dialysis procedures. And the defendants in this case, they just took the position that what they want is just overly broad, it was just too much, and they had made representations to both to the trial court as well as the Supreme Court about the cost and the resource that was going to go into it. And their position was, what is being sought and the cost, it just far outweighs what should be proper and appropriate in this case. They took that argument to the circuit judge, who just didn't agree with them. And instead of just letting it ride and moving forward with the case at the circuit court level, they elected to make an immediate appeal to the Supreme Court, which, like I said at the beginning, is very, very atypical. So one of the things that the Supreme Court was just fixated on immediately in the argument was, why are we even here? Why is this case even being argued now? Because ordinarily, matters like this aren't taken up at this stage of the proceedings. And then getting into the merits of the case, what became very clear and apparent in looking at the argument is, at least this particular Supreme Court at this particular time, is they've got a pretty wide definition of what constitutes appropriate discovery. And with regard to reasonably calculated to lead to admissible evidence, those parameters are very wide, and it became very apparent, too, in the course of the argument, that if you've got objections to them, if you've got some sort of argument that what is being sought is just too much, you better have some pretty good evidence, and you better have a pretty good argument to back that up.
So, has there been a decision already?
Yeah, so ordinarily when you argue a case to the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals, it can be weeks or it can be months and before you have a disposition. You know, we're sitting here now approximately 2 weeks after the argument, and there has already been a decision. In the arguments, if you watch the argument, Justice Kittredge and Justice James both ask on the front of the argument whether the appeal was appropriate at this time. And so what that means, in other words, is the question was raised by the court whether it should have granted certiorari to begin with. So in the end, notwithstanding all the extensive arguments on the merits of the circuit court's order about whether the discovery was appropriate or whether the objections were appropriate, the Supreme Court ultimately dismissed the grant of writ of cert as improvidently granted, which effectively ended the appeal at this stage. And so now this dispute returns to the trial court for disposition.
Now, in light of the court's obvious criticism during the argument of the defendant's decision to appeal at this time, as well, what the court articulated regarding the wide scope of discovery, what are the take-home messages for civil defendants from your point of view?
So this is the whole reason why I wanted to get on and do this podcast today is one of the things we're focused on is how can we look at what's going on in the courts and help instruct and guide our clients and our friends who are dealing with similar circumstances about, you know, what's the current attitudes of the court, what should they be doing when they're in similar situations. The things I can tell you is this, just watching this argument and ultimately looking at the disposition is, under our current appellate rules, the court is not inclined to grant interlocutory appeals concerning discovery. There, in my opinion, you've got to demonstrate clear error or prejudice by the circuit judge. And in this case, they didn't see any. And just keep in mind, with regard to the scope of review or what a court will look at when it comes to discovery, a trial judge has wide discretion when it comes to the matter of discovery. And the other thing, too, is that we want our clients to understand that both the appellate and trial court judges in this state, by and large, look at discovery as wide-ranging, and they are not incredibly inclined to wade into disputes and substantially reduce or diminish a plaintiff's pursuit of materials or other information that are reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. Whether we like it or not, the threshold is very low, at least in my opinion, based on my experience in doing this in 20-plus years, is that the threshold is very low for a plaintiff to satisfy the court when these disputes arise to say, Judge, this is what we've alleged is wrongdoing. We believe this discovery will help us carry the burden of proof if and when this case is ever tried. The last thing I want to suggest to our clients and friends is this, is that our courts are more and more treating objections to discovery that are found in your discovery responses as essentially being rote in boilerplate. So our feeling or our advisory or what we would suggest to our clients and friends is this, is that you really want to hold your fire, keep your powder dry, and reserve your objections for where it really counts and really matters. There's a distinction between just plain old inconvenience and just being completely overwhelmed with a discovery request. And from a procedural standpoint, where you can make that decision where it's just not just inconvenient, but it is going to be something that's going to cost a lot of time, something that's going to cost a lot of money, and something that's not reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence, we suggest that the better strategy is to take to the offensive and to move for a protective order versus waiting and lodging your objections and your responses. Because just again, in my experience has been when you're in a motion to compel stage that has been brought to the plaintiff, been filed by the plaintiff, and they are prosecuting the motion, judges are just going to look at your objections as being overly broad, et cetera, et cetera. It's just being boilerplate. And more times than not, that motion is going to be granted, and you're going to have to produce it. So if you need limitation or if you need protection, just go ahead and file that motion for protective order that's permitted under Rule 26. Now, that does call into something, and if we want to talk about a call to action, you know, if we were going to ask our legislators to do something on behalf of the court system in South Carolina, is this, is that it can't be argued seriously that litigation in South Carolina is just growing by leaps and bounds, and that's the product of the fact that we live in a litigious society, as well as the fact that we're a growing state. We have over 5 million people living here, and it's just those numbers are increasing on a daily basis. And the reality is, in many places in our state, the judiciary is just understaffed. And my suggestion would be, where we've got these discovery disputes, in order to move them faster and get the parties to where they need to be and give them a certainty about whether something is permitted to be pursued or not, we need duty judges in every single one of our circuits who are available at the common pleas stage to be able to review and respond to discovery motions in a faster manner than exists now. You know, this isn't anybody's fault on the judiciary side. They're doing everything they can. It's just the fact that our discovery, our litigation in general, civil litigation in general, is just huge. It's growing, and it's become very substantial. And we just need more judges in South Carolina to help dispose of the disputes that arise during litigation, as well as to try cases.
Well, Christian Stegmaier with Collins and Lacey, we want to thank you for that perspective on this, these important arguments recently in the South Carolina Supreme Court. And we invite you to join us next time right here on the Legal Bench for the latest in South Carolina legal news.
You've been listening to The Legal Bench from the South Carolina defense firm, Collins and Lacey. Learn more at collinsandlacey.com.